Word up, word of mouth Wednesday. Word up, we are back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. We have a new show lined up for you here tonight on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. This is Daniel Libby, the host of today's show for July the 7th, 2010. And coming up tonight, we have, well, quite a few things to get to. It is July 7th, 2010, and we're going to be back here for another 1 hour, 7 to 8 p.m. spoken word news show tonight. It's the Word of Mouth Wednesday. First up, well, our feature interview for tonight, we're hopefully going to be speaking with one of the candidates for mayor of Toronto 2010, and he's going to tell us his story from the G20 weekend, Selwyn Firth, but he's not here at the moment, so he might be in transit, still on his way here to CKLN 88.1 FM. So until then, we've got a lot of audio, though, clips that we're going to get into as well tonight that we didn't get into last week, involving the event that's on a lot of people's minds. And I know there's civil liberties groups, there's public inquiries on the go, and we're also going to play some audio clips with interviews that I recorded at the G20 related events a couple of weekends ago. And hopefully we'll open up the phone lines later on the show as well. So stay tuned, stay alert, be prepared. This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. We're broadcasting here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and we'll get to a bit more stuff coming up. But first, maybe we'll just go to one of those audio clips here from the G20. How about to start things off? Why don't we go with an interview with a familiar voice to the Word of Mouth Wednesday, who is a guest we've interviewed in the past, and he actually works in this building. He's the president of CSER at Ryerson, Muhammad Ali Amir, who I saw at the, it was an event on Friday, June 25th, 2010, a protest in Allen Gardens and a march through downtown related to the G20. Well, here's what Muhammad Ali Amir had to say.
Hey, Muhammad Ali Amir, president of the Continuing Education Students Association at Ryerson, also a social justice, anti-war activist, and I'm just here, you know, showing my support for the movement against the G20, and it's really great to see such a wide array of different people from across the country, from across the world, coming together to send a message that 10 years ago when we asked the G20, the G8, to open up the doors and make the system more accountable, more transparent, what they did in turn is not open up the doors. They padlocked them and they built fences in front of those doors. And we're here to send a message to our leaders that we need more accountability, we need more transparency, and the our leaders, our so-called leaders, work for us. We pay the taxes, we elect these so-called leaders, and they need to be reminded that they work for us in our best interests, not in the best interests of Exxon Valdez or Shell or Rogers Corporation. That's it.
For real. We're in Allen Gardens. We got the whole square block of Allen Gardens is lined with police officers. Muhammad Ali, were you surprised at all with the amount of officers here, the amount of people? Was this a rally?
You know what? I'm actually excited that there's this many people here, but I'm not surprised that there's this many people here. I'm also not surprised at the amount of the police presence here either. I think this is really overkill, and this is a real waste of our tax money, and this speaks to what I was saying earlier. This is basically our leaders taking our tax money and spending $800 million on security. You know, I walk to work every day this week seeing 20, 30 police officers at a time coming out of four-star hotels, and so I'm not surprised because you know what? Our leaders are totally out of touch with how we want them to be working for us and how we want our money to be spent. And $800 million going towards overkill on some police standing around watching us peacefully protest and staying in four-star hotels for an entire week, or if not longer, is completely out of line, but also not surprising because our leaders are totally out of touch.
For real. Thanks a lot.
Peace.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and that was just an interview there with Muhammad Ali Amir from CSER at Ryerson, and hopefully we'll have Muhammad Ali Amir on the show again once, you know, as we're getting closer to the to another school year starting here at Ryerson University. It's always good to speak with the president of the Continuing Education Students Union. So that was just one of the interviews that I had recorded on that weekend of the G20, and that's actually one of the topics we'll be getting into in our next segment here, because joining me right now in the studio here is a guest, it's a guest related to the countdown that's currently on for the next municipal election, which is going to take place in Toronto in October. And I checked on the Toronto.ca site today, and I counted 32 registered candidates for mayor listed. And it's an honor to be introducing one of them here today. And he's also worked as a chemical engineer, and he's spoken on subjects like the misinterpretation of the science of global warming. And he's currently running his campaign with such slogans as "We have brains, let's use them," and "Science should trump emotions." And I'd like to welcome to the Word of Mouth Wednesday today, Mr. Selwyn Firth.
Thank you for your kind words, and I do appreciate your ability to let me be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us here today. And I guess I want to ask you about the topic that's on a lot of people's minds, and because it just recently happened, and it was a major event here in Toronto. What was your experience at the G20?
Well, my experience was I decided to check out what was happening because of I am a mayoral candidate, and I thought I should have a first-hand look at what was happening regarding the police and the protesters. So I took the subway. I traveled by subway quite a bit. I took the subway down to Yonge and Bloor, and then I started walking down Yonge Street to King Street, and I started counting the broken windows to get an accurate number, and I estimated... My estimate was that there was about 30 on the east side of Yonge Street, and you double that for the west side, and you can say there's maybe 60. And that's about $100,000 in damage. But there was also collateral damage inside the stores, which I couldn't account for. But I got to the protest area at King and Bay, and the police were lined up in the riot gear, but they were very pleasant, easy to talk to, saying that the... protesters had dissipated and they were up the street, so I walked up the street, I saw them, and there was really hardly anything going on. And then I went over to a local pub in the vicinity called the Imperial, where I played trivia, and I checked out what was happening there, and I saw this mass situation at Queen's Park, so I thought I should go over to look at it. And having been a graduate of the University of Toronto, I knew the ins and outs of the area. And I decided to go by the MedSci building to see if I could get an elevated look at the protesters. And I was told to stop progressing, which I did. I was about 60, 70 feet away from the police. And I said, "I'm just here to ask questions. I want to find out what's happening." And the police came over. I thought they were actually coming over to talk to me. But the first officer bumped into me three times, pushed me back. And then the other two grabbed me and said, "You're under arrest." And I said, "For what?" And they wouldn't tell me. They just said, "You're under arrest." They took me into custody, and then they put me through the whole fingerprinting, photographing, everything. Took off all my strings, my laces for my shoes. They cut the lace in my hood on my jacket. They took my belt, and... then they took me into custody, and then, I was interred at the Eastern Avenue Cattle Corral, and it was really quite disturbing to see what happened and the kind of people that were there. Most of them claimed to be innocent. They weren't doing anything. They weren't fighting. They weren't throwing. They weren't doing anything. They were just sitting there protesting, and they were, charged and grabbed by the police. So it was a pretty devastating kind of situation. Then... things only got worse for me because I'm a type 1 diabetic. I'm insulin dependent. I need insulin every few hours. I advised this to the arresting officers. They took me to see the doctor they had on staff, and he didn't even know where he could get insulin. And I finally had to tell him there was a 24-hour Shoppers Drug Mart in a neighborhood that wasn't too far away. He tried to get the kind of insulin I needed. He couldn't. He got one type, which I was able to use, but it was not the long-acting type, so I had to be careful as to what I ate and how low my blood sugar got. So I didn't sleep that night. I didn't eat because I had lack of insulin. And the other situation, next morning going up to the Finch Avenue Courthouse, I again asked about the insulin. They said, "Oh, it'll be there. Don't worry about it." I get to the Finch Avenue courthouse and ask about the insulin, and they say, oh, no, we don't have any of that stuff here. And I said, well, the guys down at Eastern Avenue told me this, and the other police officer referred to him as an a-hole. And I kind of agreed with that because the way the situation was, they had no preparation for anybody with any kind of medical condition that might be inadvertently caught up in this thing. I wasn't intending to protest. I was there as an observer, and I really observed a lot about the operation of the Toronto Police Force, and believe me, it's not pretty, and it's not something that I would like to see in this city continue the way it did. I finally, after about 16 hours of being in custody, I was able to get another shot of insulin. I was hustled back to the courthouse, hustled up to the bail hearing so that they could grant me bail and get me out of their sight and out of mind. And that was it. I finally got home around 8 o'clock Sunday night, which was 26 hours after I had initially left the house to go and observe what was happening.
Right. Wow. This is a serious situation here. We're speaking with Selwyn Firth, but we've just got to take a quick break here. We'll be right back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday with more info on what's...
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the show, and we're talking with Selwyn Firth, who's a candidate for mayor, who was just describing a bit about his experience at the G20. And I just wanted to back up your story here before you started talking about the horrible conditions of this what's come to be known as Trontanamo Bay, this facility on Eastern Avenue. I was just wondering about could you just describe the incident that they where you were apprehended? Like you said, you were in Queen's Park, but
no, I wasn't at Queen's Park. I tried to look at Queen's Park from the University of Toronto campus. I was on the near the Med Science Building, near the McLeod Auditorium, mm-hmm. J.R.R. McLeod Auditorium, where they have science shows and various other things. Right. That was I was 60-70 feet from where the police were. The police were guarding a set of steps that lead down to Queen's Park, mm-hmm. and it's an elevated area. It's a plaza. It's got pebble stone surface and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was at least 60-70 feet from the police, and they told me to stop, so I stopped. Mm-hmm. And then they told me to leave. I said, no, I'm here. I want to observe. I want to know what's going on. What's happening? Mm-hmm. And I insisted that I be told. I told them I identified myself as a mayoral candidate, at least expecting to get a little bit of respect about, checking out what's happening. Nothing. They came, arrested me, and threw me to the ground. I ended up with lacerations on my face, my knees, and my hand. And this was for doing nothing except exerting my right to be able to be somewhere.
And I know that there's a lot of, I know that this similar things, I guess, happened they're saying over 1,000 people had been detained or arrested or, kettled. During this G20 weekend, were you charged? I know a lot of the people had been released without any charges. Were you charged with anything?
I was charged with obstructing police, and that's the only charge that I have. And I'm released on $1,000 bail. And I have to appear in court on August 23rd to set a trial date, and that's the situation as it is right now. I had bail conditions where I wasn't allowed to go downtown until July the 5th, which is, Monday. And so everything is okay at this point in time.
Right, yeah. And we're glad you're able to make it here today to CKLN for this interview here on 88.1 FM. And with all this going on, I think it'll be good to get into some of the issues with the campaign for mayor, because you're running as a candidate for mayor. And, one of them that I noticed on your site, because I went to this SelwynForMayor.com. You can check out the Selwyn Firth site. And one of the links I noticed on there was an open letter you had written to Dalton McGuinty.
I did.
And the subject of this was on the issue of global warming. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on global warming? And, especially with from what I read in the letter, is that you're not totally convinced with the carbon dioxide as the cause.
No, carbon dioxide has got nothing to do with the cause. It's the messenger. When you burn coal, you release an awful lot of heat. When you burn oil, you release even more heat. And if any of the scientists of the past 150 years had actually done the calculations of the heat energy that was actually being released in total to the atmosphere, they would have come up with a completely different reason for global warming. It would have been a heating effect. And I presented a lecture at the American Mensa gathering that just happened in Detroit a few days ago to an audience of over 100 people who looked at me as if I was some kind of crazy person, but then they listened and they understood that it's a heating effect. It's not the carbon dioxide. And by using alternatives and renewables, we're actually doing more harm than we are by continuing to use the hydrocarbons. The issue I find is that if you don't get the science right, you make all kinds of predictions about what's happening because you can't explain things. But if they had done the science in the first place, they would have been explaining it quite well. The IPCC in 2005 released a report saying that they estimated that the heating rise since 1800 was somewhere between around 0.78 degrees Celsius plus or minus 0.026 degrees Celsius. That's a pretty wide range for a very small amount of material. My actual calculations, and I challenge any chemical engineer, any chemist to refute them, is that if you burn enough coal and oil to put 150 ppm of CO2 into the atmosphere, the energy released will heat the atmosphere by 1.68 degrees Celsius, which is significantly more than what the IPCC has said. And so by using alternative renewable energy, such as biodiesel, has at least as much energy in it as petrodiesel. And by continuing to use it, we are not taking it out of the atmosphere. We're keep adding heat to the atmosphere. And that's the real issue. And the same thing with most other renewables is that we're still putting the energy back into the atmosphere. And by doing so, we keep heating the atmosphere instead of thinking about mitigating what's happening. And one of the things I propose is that we use a common fertilizer, anhydrous ammonia. If you blast it into the upper atmosphere using rockets, you could make a few more clouds. And clouds could reflect enough sunlight that we could maintain our nice, cozy, 11 degrees Celsius average around the world. Mm-hmm. But, we have to start thinking about it now, because if we don't, my current calculation is that we're using enough energy to heat the atmosphere by a tenth of a degree per year. That's 10 degrees Celsius in 100 years. And by that time, we'll have ice melting like you wouldn't believe. We'll have all kinds of catastrophes that we can't even predict now. Storms are going to be even greater. Hurricanes are probably going to be greater. More tornadoes in different parts of the world. We'll probably have more tornadoes further north because the warmer air will be coming further north, and we'll be experiencing more in Canada than they do in the United States. The tornado belt may actually move, several hundred miles north in 100 years. We don't know, because we can't predict any of these things. All we know is that there's an awful lot of energy going into the atmosphere right now, and it's got to cause reactions. It's a chemical thermodynamic situation, and all of that takes place, and there's nothing we can do about it. But if we did make clouds, be one way of mitigating what we're doing.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting to be speaking with you on this, because I know, and you just mentioned that you had done a presentation, I guess, against or with some of the the smartest people in North America. If you're at the North America Mensa meeting, doing this presentation on this the non-science of climate change. I guess with what you're talking about and how it's, you don't think it's a carbon dioxide fault of that's causing this global warming. So I guess when you're hearing a lot of this stuff in the news, or these ideas, or whether you're talking about carbon caps, carbon trading, capping carbon, like, is this, are you thinking that's like not even
it doesn't make sense. It's not the problem. The problem is the energy that's released when you use carbon. If we could magically convert everything to solar power today, we would still be heating the atmosphere at the same rate, because the heat energy that's used for the lights here, for the speakers, for everything, mm-hmm. all of that ultimately ends up heating the atmosphere, because that's the nature of energy. You can't create it. You can't destroy it. All you can do is store it. You can store it in batteries. You can store it in behind power dams. You can store it in wood, peat, coal, oil, all of those things that take chemical reactions. The energy can be stored there, but once it's released, it's got to go somewhere, and if it doesn't go into the oceans, it goes into the atmosphere. So we have a choice: either heat the atmosphere rapidly, or heat the oceans slowly, or build some clouds and try and mitigate the whole situation. But we have choices. But if we don't know that we have the choices, we don't know what the choices are and what we're really doing, there's very little that we can actually do as a population. And that's my main issue, is trying to get the science out to the people to understand. And it's not hard to understand. It's relatively simple stuff.
For real. And how about we get into another topic here, because I know it's one of the top topics when I went to your site, Sell One for Mayor. And it had to do with, I guess it's a subject that doesn't get talked about too much on the radio, but, I know last summer it was a major subject here in Toronto, and that was the subject of garbage. What's your policy on garbage? What are you thinking for garbage in Toronto?
Well, garbage contains an awful lot of energy, and we're an energy-dependent society. All of the garbage, if you bury it in landfill, it eventually gets converted to CO2, because we have bacteria. They like to eat up garbage. They'll even eat up plastic over time. But it takes a long time. But over, 10,000 years, all the garbage that's been buried in the landfill around the world is going to turn into CO2, and it's going to penetrate into the atmosphere at some point. There's heat associated with that, and that heat is going to go into the atmosphere as well. But if we can take the energy out of that garbage, incinerate it, and do it cleanly, incinerate it and scrub the gases so that the energy is the excess energy that we're not using in our electrical generation goes into a heating water, which we can then put into the lake, and the lake will eventually take it to the oceans. It'll warm the oceans a fraction of a degree for every degree that we would be heating the atmosphere instead. And we can do it cleanly in a two-step process, because we can take a big container of water, pump all of the exhaust gas through it, and strip out all of the toxins from that gas, cool the gas to ambient temperatures, let it float into the atmosphere, and then treat that water as a separate entity and do a heat exchange with that in Lake Ontario water. So we separate the toxins from the lake water, from everything, and it can be done. And it's worth, in my estimate, it's worth about $425 million a year, because we save the $100 million in burial fees that we've been paying to Michigan or wherever it's going to be buried. And we make $300 million or $325 million from the electricity that's generated by building a power plant. And, we kill two birds with one stone, minimize our situation, and we don't have this stench of garbage all over the place, and that is just piling up and doing nothing for us when it's got a lot of valuable energy in it.
Well, yeah, these are some interesting ideas. And one of them I wanted to ask you about is something, because you just brought up water, and I know that there is some groups, some movements in Toronto talking about the Toronto's water supply. And I just was wondering, with your background in science, I was wondering if there's something in Toronto's water supply that I think there's some other places in North America and Europe don't have it, and that's fluoride. Are you at all concerned with fluoride in the water supply? Is that an issue?
I am finding more about fluoride than I ever wanted to know. The idea of the fluoridation of water has been subject for question for some time. The original idea was that it was going to help children's teeth, but I've been reading and finding out that there are some that it seems to cause cracking in teeth, and it causes, and that's more predominant with cavities, because if you get a crack in the enamel surface of your teeth, then the bacteria can find a place to live, and they can start eating away and dissolving the enamel, and you end up with cavities. So there is a question about that. And there are states in the United States where they ban the use of fluoride, and they don't even allow it in products like toothpaste. But toothpaste, again, they have this kind of a waste product that they put in toothpaste, claiming it's got this benefit. But I don't think there is a lot of study done on that, and I would really worry about how much is in there and if there are any safe levels. Because I'm quite familiar with fluoride, and it's one very toxic material. Mm-hmm. So I do have concerns about it, for sure.
Okay, and, you know, with a concern that's on a lot of people's minds is what happened at the G20. And we started off the interview with you giving your story, and it sounded pretty hardcore what happened to you. Your experience at the G20 a couple of weekends ago. But then, you know, when I went to SelwynForMayor.com, I saw that one of your campaign issues and or things you're trying to do is encourage youth and police interaction. So I was wondering, has this changed at all with your recent experience with the cops, and what is this issue for you?
I've always thought there should be more interaction between the police and youth, and in ways of competitiveness, you know, like of you know, games, you know, young people under 20 tend to be physically quite active, mm-hmm. and they like challenges, and I could see that they could be interacting and playing games against local police forces and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I still think that's a valid way of approaching the police interaction with youth. Mm-hmm. I think the situation that happened at the G20 is a bad thing for the city, and that it should be corrected and addressed, but the idea of interacting, keeping the police well interacting with the youth instead of being seen as a fear factor and trying to keep peace and orderly conduct because your people are afraid of being arrested, I think that's an issue. And I don't see that as a real possible way of having better relationships with the police. But I think the police have to stand up and say, yeah, we didn't do it right. We should have done this. We should have stood up and protected civil rights, not gone with it. You know, I was telling friends, I said, I'm not saying that the G20 is like anything that happened in World War II with the dire consequences for the Jewish populations of Europe. Mm-hmm. But at the trials in Nuremberg, the issue was, I was only following orders, and that wasn't a valid excuse. It's not a valid excuse for any police officer to say, I was just following orders. They have the knowledge and the responsibility to protect people, not to trash their civil rights. And if they didn't do that, then they're at fault. And that's something that has to be corrected.
For real. And, the looking into the G20 will continue with all these more stories we're hearing, all the words that are coming out, reports that are coming out daily, more stuff. You know, we're finding out that it took place within, you know, that a few day span a couple weeks ago with the major G20 event. And then also here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, we're going to start getting into talking a lot more about the race for mayor, because this is a big countdown, I guess, till October. October 25th, 2010. We're going to have elect a new mayor in Toronto, and you know, it'll be municipal elections. So that's why I'm glad I was able to speak with you, Solon Firth, here today. I guess is there any? Do you have any last words, maybe on the campaign?
I could always use volunteers. Anybody willing to volunteer to help me get the city going in the right direction, I'd really appreciate it. And if there's, you know, it's a great experience to get involved with political stuff when you're young, at young age. I was involved with the NDP years ago when a former teacher of mine was running for the downtown area. And I helped out with his campaign, and I got to learn a little bit about the politics. I acted as a scrutineer at an election night. That was something that I had, you know, no idea, but I was, you know, 20 years old, and that's what was happening. So he respected me enough to take me on as to help him, and so he assigned me as a scrutineer for one of the polling stations, and that's what I did. So it was a great experience, and I urge anybody, man or woman, you know, if they want to do something, they need to start young and early and get involved. But being apathetic and saying, oh, somebody else will do it, you end up with the same old all the time. And that's why I've decided to try and get things going in a different direction in the city. I've lived here for 44 years, and it's a great city. It's one of the best cities in the world, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. But if we get somebody else, like the people that are running, I don't think any of them have a clue as to what the city needs, and they're just there for the politics. And I really want to do something, and I don't want to denigrate anybody. I just think that they're not knowledgeable about what's necessary and what's going to happen if we don't do things, because they're talking nonsense about the transit system, things like that, where they don't understand why we're having all of this stupid congestion. You know, 18th out of 18 cities in congestion, and. And why? Because we haven't built any roads or expressways in 40 years. And yet we've doubled the size of the downtown core and with people and businesses. And yet you can't empty and fill a container with the same old infrastructure if you double the size of the container. And that's the issue that I have, is that we're not doing the right things to make the city viable and workable. So people are going to start moving elsewhere at some point. I mean, it'll still be very desirable to live here, but how many people, how many businesses are going to continue to suffer the mind-boggling consequences of congestion the way it is?
For real. And yeah, and hopefully before October 25th, we'll be able to speak with you again on the Word of Mouth. But yeah, thanks for joining us today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, Solon Firth.
Well, I thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure for me to be here. I hope your audience participates and gets involved with the election and helps out any candidate, not just me, any candidate that they choose. Like I have my agenda, my ideas, but there's other candidates that they might, you know, feel more comfortable with. And I urge them to do that. If it means I lose the election, so be it. That's the way life is.
Right. So that was just Solon Firth here in the studio joining us. And for more info, you can check out SolonForMayor.com. That's SELWYN for Mayor.com for his website and some more info on his campaign. And we'll be right back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Just going to throw it to a quick musical track here. This one is a track called the G20 Song, and it's by The Usual Suspects with Dave Parkinson as a lead singer. And then we'll be back with more words on the G20. This is it. Word up.
Locking up the street where the leaders meet to pick the pockets of the bodies in the street. Talk about poverty, 2 billion already. Bail out the economy, couple times already. Bail out the bank, using Interact. $1.50 each time, I want my money back. Here come the protesters to challenge the investors who took all the money you've been saving for your best years. The protesters want action. They got dissatisfaction at the court. corporate elites taking over our streets. When the leaders come to meet, plotting to defeat indigenous peoples, migrant workers, aboriginals, women's rights, First Nations, immigration, talking about the people who have built this nation. Criminals in power wouldn't put it past Harper pull an inside job on the CN Tower. No questions will be lingering about the people that they're fingering. Blame it on the anti-global activist, anarchist, terrorist. I'm sure you'll make it on the list. They'll be jamming, cameras be grabbing. No, they're gonna get you with the sonic sound cannon.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. And we just got to get into the subject of the G20 because the G20 is still a major subject. And we're finding out more and more every day. We just heard from someone, Firth, a candidate for mayor who had been arrested somewhere near Queen's Park. Not even on Queen's Park, but somewhere in, I guess it was in a U of T area near a U of T building. And his story is actually written out on his site at sellinformayor.com. You can read it's a couple pages explanation of how he spent his weekend because they kept him in there for the night. And then, you know, we didn't even get into much into the conditions of the Torontonimo Bay or what he thought, but he wrote a lot about it, as well as his medical condition, diabetes, which required the insulin shots, which were not, which were, I guess, tough to come by when you're locked up in a film studio on Eastern Avenue. Now, he did mention that he has been charged with something, and I believe that there's a few hundred people that have been charged, but over 1,000 people were arrested. So they're saying that the majority of people had not been charged actually with anything. They're just released. It was a big misunderstanding or mistake. there have been some ridiculous stories, including the TTC uniform TTC worker kept in there for hours and hours in uniform. And he had been walking towards work, I guess, College Station, when they apprehended him. You know, there's also the stories. What do they have? The cache of weapons table. They found out that the cache of weapons table, a lot of the weapons seized had nothing to do with the G20. The gardening tools. What else was there? There was some sort of foam arrows that were used for a medieval role-playing game that were seized. You know, This whole situation is quite the situation. That's why we'll open up a line here, a phone line here. We've got a different number, though, just in case you're hearing it and you want to talk about the G20. You can give us a call at 416-595-1479. That's a special number for just for the next few minutes till we wrap up here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. 416-595-1479. To give us a call on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. If you have any words on the G20 or what you just heard in the last segment. So what I think I'll do, though, we don't get a caller, it'll be a good time to play maybe another interview here. This was an interview I recorded on the Saturday of the G20, so Saturday, June 26th. This was in the parade before the vandalism had broken out, before the Black Bloc went on their smashing rampage. It was a very peaceful protest with thousands of people. You know, it looked like at least 5 to 6 times the size as the anti-pirogue rally that took place in January during the prorogue of Canadian Parliament. This was a lot bigger. It was a lot of people. And one of the people or one of the groups that was there was the Council of Canadians. And I actually got to interview one of the spokespeople for the Council of Canadians, Andrea Harden Donahue. Here is what Andrea Harden Donahue had to say at the G20 protest rally march, the peaceful protest rally march.
At the rally, it's a big Saturday rally against the G20 meetings currently going on. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, I'm Andrea Harden Donahue. I'm the climate justice campaigner with the Council of Canadians.
Awesome. And what's going on with the climate justice campaign right now?
Well, with our climate justice campaign coming out of Copenhagen, having been present in Cochabamba, there's a real shift, and that shift is about emphasizing system change, not climate change. So going beyond just knowing that we need to reduce emissions and thinking about, you know, green jobs and how we can do that, that's really important, don't get me wrong, but looking at the root causes of the climate crisis and seeing how that's very much connected with the type of policies being promoted by the G8 and G20. It's bad medicine, it hasn't worked, and it's not going to work now, and that's what the leaders need to hear. That global economic model, free trade, which puts profit above people and above the environment, we need to get at those root causes and recognize, as part of our movement for climate justice, that we need to start talking about lowering consumption levels, about fair trade, about building resilience in our communities. These are some of the real climate justice solutions, including repayment of climate debt to the global south.
For real, and with these 20 leaders here in Toronto right now meeting, do you think that they're going to be touching on the environmental issues? Do you think anything's going to come of this, though?
Perhaps superficially in a photo op moment, they might slip the environment in as it relates to the economy. But will we see any meaningful change? Absolutely not. It's the same bad medicine that hasn't been working and is actually, in fact, not working but causing the sickness that we're seeing on so many multiples of levels in terms of respect for human rights and in terms of respect for the environment and living within the boundaries that we have in our world. So, no, we're not going to see real change. That's why people are taking to the streets and saying, well, first of all, not the G20, not the G8, the G192, the United Nations is there for a reason. Let's use it. But beyond that, working in our communities and in our countries to see real change, real solutions, like making the polluter pay, like actually not subsidizing dirty fuels and instead subsidizing local green job creation, public and community-owned renewable energy as opposed to corporate massive wind farms. These are real solutions.
Yeah, and thanks a lot for speaking with us today.
Thanks.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here in the studio. We're in a Studio 2 right now, working on a different board here just because we got a few repairs going on here at CKLN 88.1 FM. And to mention, just in case any of that interview earlier in the show was cut off, I am going to try to get the archive in case any of it didn't get through in the transmission. And usually I've been posting MP3 archives of the Word of Mouth Wednesday on Radio for All, one of the spots you can find them. Also a site with links, wednesdaywordofmouth.wordpress.com. You should be able to find a few archives there. And then I've also got some video clips up. I've got a YouTube channel, youtube.com/supportlocalscene. I posted a few clips on the Toronto Media Co-op from the G20. And also, you know, there's more clips have gotten out. And I first started talking with Andrea Harden Donahue, the woman who you just heard speaking about the environmental issues at the protest march, because I noticed that the Council of Canadians group, they had the big banner with Council of Canadians, were actually handing out hearing ear blockers, you know, things to put in your ear to cancel the noise out, just in case the sound cannon was used. And as far as I know, the sound cannon was not used at the G20, but I have seen it in video. It was seen on Spadina, south of Queen. They did bring out the truck with a large sound cannon on the top of it. Apparently, at the right before the kettling took place, the kettling that I got stuck in on the Sunday night, Sunday, June 27th, at Queen and Spadina, on one of the video clips from YouTube user Manuelo15, who is a part of the Kitchener 9/11 Truth movement, was in town helping out Press for Truth with some stuff, and he actually got he was apprehended along with Ottawa Fro, who's part of the Ottawa 9/11 Truth, Tyrone from Ottawa. Both of those guys working for Press for Truth that were stuck in the kettling situation with a few hundred people that I was also in, both of those guys got apprehended or, you know, taken away in those plastic twist cuffs. But at least they've got their stories out on YouTube, so you can check those out if you're interested. Also, check out pressfortruth.ca for a lot of great coverage that Press for Truth had on the G20. And it was good to hear. I think I heard a few of the guys getting interviewed on Monday Word of Mouth Monday that the Rude Awakening host BK was guest hosting, I guess. So that was good to hear, because also the United We Fall movie is out. United We Fall is the Press for Truth documentary that just came out a few weeks ago, premiered at the Bloor Cinema, is now online for anyone to see. It's in about 12 parts, I think, on YouTube. So you can watch it in part. Or you can find it all on pressfortruth.ca. You'll find the links, pressfortruth.ca. So that, you know, that's the kind of stuff you can look out for. And then on Manuelo15's video on the Kitchener 9/11 Truth video, he actually has clips of the sound cannon parked at Queen and Spadina. But I guess I assume it wasn't parked there during the whole rainstorm and everything, because I didn't notice it there. And, you know, it must have been earlier on in the event. But there were definitely people walking around saying that they had seen the sound cannon. And I guess we could be glad that it wasn't, that they didn't use that, especially since we were surrounded and there was nowhere to go. So if they did turn the sound cannon on us, we would have been, our ears would be hurting probably. Now, to switch topics here, because, you know, we're getting into a lot of different issues now. With the G20 is a major global initiative, global leaders combining, world government. We're talking about the movie United We Fall, focuses mostly on the North American Union, but it even that one gets into the global issues, gets into the fact that we're on databases. Every Canadian's on a database. We don't know what kind of details they're holding on us, but we did play a few months ago a clip of the head of CSIS, Richard Fadden, with his introductory remarks, I guess, when he was sworn in as a head of CSIS, or one of his big speeches as when he was made the head of CSIS, speaking about how he wouldn't be surprised if within a few years people are comparing CSIS to the German Stasi, the East German secret police that was considered, you know, one of the most secretive of all police, you know, one of the most extensive spy rings on their own population. Richard Fadden is now under a tight watch all around Canada. They want to know what this guy is talking about, because all of a sudden Richard Fadden has become a major conspiracy theorist. Now, I don't know if that's quite the word to be using when you're talking about the head of the Security Intelligence Services, the head of the secret spy network in Canada, to say that he's a conspiracy theorist, because you'd hope that he'd be operating under facts. And, you know, I hope that that's true, but I know there's a lot of politicians that are skeptical because they're not getting the answers that they want from Richard Fadden. Richard Fadden was under the microscope a few days ago, and I got some clips here from CPAC, the Public Security Committee questioning of the CSIS director. MP LeVar Payne had a few questions for Richard Fadden. How about just a quick clip here of Richard Fadden? What is he talking about when he's talking about foreign government influence, espionage, and, you know, the influence, under whose influence the Canadian MPs are under? Here's a question for Richard Fadden that took place. The Canadian Security Intelligence Services Director to the Public Security Committee. Here is that clip here. We'll just get this going here.
How does CSIS constitute sufficient concern, and what should be forwarded to the appropriate authorities?
Again, Mr. Chairman, I think it's very, very hard to generalize. But if we find over the years that there has been secret pressure, secret influence, secret meetings, the activity of the foreign power has to be clandestine. It has to be secret. You know, a diplomat operating out of a foreign embassy does not qualify in this instance. But if the influence, if the benefits, if the activity is clandestine, if we become aware of it, it operates over a number of years. If the individual concern is operating in an area that would be of interest to that foreign power, we eventually would form the view that as to whether or not there is a matter for concern, we would open a file and move it through the process that I talked about a little bit earlier.
Okay.
That was just some words there from Richard Fadden when he's asked about what will CSIS do, what would be the process that CSIS would undertake if they found that these spying rings were occurring. And this is quite shocking, because they're announcing today that Russia, that they're accusing Russia of doing some covert spying in the United States, and I think there might even be some Canadian connections with that. I haven't looked too into it too much, but they're saying it was at least up to double digits of covert Russian spies working in America. Well, these remarks by Richard Fadden in a recent interview on CBC have sparked up an outcry in Canadian communities, especially in the Chinese Canadian community, because he listed Chinese people as or China as one of the countries believed to be involved with this. And so, you know, there's people, you know, getting the word out. MP Olivia Chow had a response to the CSIS director, Richard Fadden. Here's what Olivia
Chinese
Chow had
Canadians,
to say.
Canadians, especially if they are a cabinet minister or politicians in municipal government, are now under suspicion. So I believe that because Mr. Fadden doesn't quite understand why what he did is harmful, and that he said it is not extraordinary for a statement to be made like that. He obviously doesn't understand the harm that he have done to elected representatives. And the NDP have called for his resignation.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. So that was Olivia Chow there calling for the resignation. The NDP has called for the resignation of the head of CSIS, Richard Fadden, over these remarks, controversial remarks. And they are controversial. And the reason I was talking about a possible conspiracy theory is because there is a book out that I read a couple years ago that gets into all of this topic, and this is why Richard Fadden is only skimming the surface. This is a book that you can find in the Toronto Public Library system. I actually ordered it a couple years ago, so hopefully they still have it. It's called Dispersing the Fog, Inside the Secret World of Ottawa and the RCMP by Paul Pelango. Now, Paul Pelango, in this book, writes about a lot of things. He gets into the RCMP, he gets into the Power Corporation, and he even gets into a controversial Project Sidewinder, the investigation into espionage and criminal activity that was conducted to look at the Chinese government's influence in Canada. Well, the Dispersing the Fog book also doesn't stop at talking about China. So that's where it gets deeper into where they should be probing Richard Fadden. Is that there's other countries listed, and it's not just China, and it's not just Russia, although both are mentioned. You also got to look out for the USA, the UK, Israel, and other nations. You know, the European Union, I believe, has Interpol, and other different nations have different secret intelligence services. Well, this is a lot. It's a lot to get into, and maybe we might even get into more into this next week, because we're running out of time here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and we got the Blues Dr. Julie Hill getting ready for her show next. So we're just going to end off here. I'll read out a few quick events here that I'm just going to read out, including some events coming up. Now, we've got the events that are coming up on... we've got events coming up on the tomorrow. There's actually survivors of the attack on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla are going to be speaking in Toronto tomorrow, July the 8th. It's a public forum taking place at OISE. 6 p.m. is a press scrum. 7 p.m. the event begins. So you can check that out, the main auditorium at 252 Bloor Street West. And then also this Saturday is the Day of Action for Civil Liberties at Queen's Park, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. It's a mass demonstration and march in the access and the opposition to excessive use of police force at the G20. Join the Day of Action for Civil Liberties in towns and cities across Canada in Toronto. It'll be at Queen's Park, 1 p.m., July 10th. And that's it for the Word of Mouth Wednesday here. And my name's Daniel Libby, just signing out. All right, word of mouth, word up, word out.